Welcome back. Now, if you haven't listened to the second episode of Without a Trace, you have probably figured out that there was going to be a bonus episode. This is the bonus episode. Now, I could have paired these two, but I didn't. I don't necessarily believe that these two needed to be within the same episode, even if we did two sponsor segments. But this is the episode about Ed Gein. I'm pretty sure I did mispronounce his last name. But we're just gonna go by Ed throughout the episode. Anyhow, this is gonna be a viewer discretion advice. Just like the last episode, this is going to be a lot of murder, blood, and skinning of humans, along with wearing their skin on his skin, in short. So, like I said, viewer's discretion is advised with this episode. Very strong warning to this. Without further ado, if you haven't followed us once again on our Facebook page, we've been updating on our Facebook page, and we even posted an article on the blog post we did, and that is continuing off of an article that I had written in February of this year, as we continue to search for answers and bring justice for Tommy Haas. Anyhow, without further ado, if you haven't been notified and wondering why you haven't been getting notifications, well, here's the short answer. One, if you aren't following us, you're not going to get notified. I'm sorry, but follow us if you want to get notified. And once you follow us, and if people that are following us aren't still getting notified, it's that simple. Whenever you hit follow, most apps, especially like Spotify and Apple and Google, it will prompt you to follow us. You don't have to, or not necessarily follow us, but get notifications from us. And you know, with the tap of your finger, you know, you just get notifications. So it's just that easy. Make sure you're getting notifications if you're wondering why you're not getting notifications. Now let's get into the episode without rambling. Like I said, viewer discretion is advised because we are going to be going somewhere really dark. Like a really dark place. And keep an open mind on this. Whenever people hear about this guy, they want to say he's a monster. And I'm not lying, he is. But the reason that I want you as an audience keeping an open-minded, you know, set, you get what I'm saying, is because whenever we talk about killers, especially serial killers, and even one-time murderers, to mass shooters, to serial rapists, to serial killer, not serial killers, but serial shooters, and all of these type of serial people, we often don't remember that, or we don't look at the nature versus nurture. In certain cases, like Jeffrey Dahmer, he had a perfect home life. You know, perfect family. His parents loved him. You know, his siblings loved him. But outside of his house, he was getting bullied. You know, and we have Australia's first serial killer, who is a woman, Catherine Knight. She killed all of her husbands, even feeding them to her kids. You know, and she was raised in a very, very, very horrible house. She was getting abused. So when we talk about Ed, we have to understand, is this a nature or a nurture thing? A nature meaning that, you know, it's part of nature, and he was raised to become a killer. or I should say Aubrey was a killer to be brought up as one. That makes sense. Or a nurture case where he was nurtured into becoming a killer throughout his life. And that's up to you to decide. I'm not going to force you to decide one or the other. It's up to you. But keep that in mind. He is also famous for movies like Psycho, to Silence of the Lambs, to even Leatherface. And he never, really were those type of people. Definitely when we talk about Norman Bates and Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. But, he inspired those type of characters. Who was Ed? We got to start out with, like I said, we got to kind of go a little bit within his life. He was born on August 27th of 1906 in La Crosse, Wisconsin. He had a timid alcoholic father, and his mother was a fanatically religious person. He also grew up with his older brother, Henry, and he was in a household where his mother was very controlling. She dominated the house. And a lot of it was because she was religious. Now, I'm not hating against religious people, but in this case, she seemed more of, if you do this, you're eternally damned. If you commit sin, you're not going to heaven. If you go out and lust and have carnal desire, you're not going to enter the kingdom of God type of thing. She was borderline an extremist in the religion. And when they moved, it didn't really help. Ed was particularly close to his mother. Now, I don't know if he was necessarily close to his father, but he would always stay home whenever they moved to a farm outside of Plainfield, Wisconsin. He just didn't care about leaving, except for whenever he attended school. After his father died in 1940, him and his brother began working more to support the family. In 1944, Henry had died when they were burning brush on the property, and was initially believed to be a result of the fire, but as we can see a lot, Ed was under the suspicion of his brother's death. Now, once again, I did mention just a few seconds ago, he was really, 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 really a lot, but he was obsessively devoted to his mother. Like I say, he never left home, nor did he date. However, after she died in late 1945, few years after his father died, he became increasingly deranged. Now, living alone at the time, he pretty much seemed to stay at the farm. He didn't touch a room. He never made it messy. It was always neat. It's kind of like he felt a sense of grief. It's similar to when parents have their kid disappear or their kid die. You see these parents never touch their kid's room. They may enter their kid's room, but they never touch anything. They never disturb what was there the last time that they seen their kid. And it's the same way that Ed is experiencing his loss. He feels lonely. He feels like his mother has to come back. He feels like, the same scenario before she died, so he doesn't touch the room to disturb the memory of his mother. But the rest of his house at the time did become such a mess. He also developed an interest in anatomy books. He also managed to support himself as a handyman and as a babysitter, which to a lot of people before knowing what he did. It's just odd. You know, he had odd behaviors, or as people would probably describe him. Meanwhile, though, over the years, a few residents from the general area had mysteriously disappeared. One of them was Mary Hogan, who ran a tavern in nearby Pine Grove that he regularly frequented. Then we got the murder of Bernice Warden. You know, on November 16th of 1957, Bernice Warden was reported missing from her hardware store in Plainfield, with the cash register gone and a child blood leading out the back. Her son, Frank, who at the time was a deputy sheriff, he already had his eyes on Ed. And then shortly after, the authorities came to Ed's home that night. And that's where, you know, things kind of like an eye-opener. They didn't just walk into a nice home. On top of that, they didn't expect to actually find Warden's headless, gutted body, which was hanging from the ceiling. Further investigation also yielded more shocking discoveries, including he had organs in jars and skulls used as soup bowls. And like I said, we go back into a serial killer's mind, which I know this isn't like a series for it or anything, but we see this kind of a lot. Killers like to preserve their trophies. Like, they like to keep it. We've seen that with Jeffrey Dahmer and his animal collection, which he did the same thing. He put his animal collection, dead animals, organs, brains, whatnot, in containers. And then he eventually moved to humans and did the same thing with humans. Under questioning, he confessed to killing both Warden and Hogan 3 years earlier. Additionally, he admitted to digging up numerous corpses and then cutting off the body parts, practicing necrophilia. I'm not going to describe that, but in short, he was pretty much having sex with the dead, and fashioning masks and suits out of skin to wear around the home. With that sort of evidence, authorities attempted to connect him to other murders and disappearances from recent years, but you know, as every serial killer and killer can go with this, and you gotta understand that sometimes you can't find everybody. Some killers have a lot more unknown victims, but there's not enough evidence drawing it towards that person. In this case, it's like that as well. There's not enough evidence or anything to support that he was ever linked to these other murders and disappearances. They could only speculate, which in the court of law does not work. His lawyer entered a plea of not guilty by the reason of insanity. In January of 1958, he was found unfit to stand trial. Okay, he was committed to Central State Hospital, where he variously worked as a mason, carpenter's assistant, and medical center aide. Now, you may be wondering why plea deal for insanity. In the short answer, he was insane. Imagine losing your whole entire family within a few years or so. He first lost his brother, which the blame was pushed onto him. He lost his father, which I don't know if he really cared about, but it might have affected him. And he lost his mother, and that destroyed him. He lost his whole entire family within that decade. And his mother's death broke him. His mother's death made such a burden on him that he felt so alone and he didn't know what to do with himself. He spiraled, his mental health spiraled. He wasn't him. I'm not saying he was ever him, but at this time, when we talk about the plea for sanity, we look at all these cases and all these scenarios, and in his case, he wasn't safe. His mental health stopped succeeding and being better, and it declined, and he just became a mess. So that's why some people will never ever realize why some people plead insanity. It's not because a mother's death, in this case it was with Ed, but it's because there's certain things that make a person insane. Whether or not they were born insane, or the environment around them made their mental health decline and they did things like this. He was found insane at the time of the murder, and he was recommitted to Central State Hospital after he was determined fit to finally to stand trial. But obviously, like I said, that changed. He tried to petition for release, but was rejected, and the mild-mannered Ed made virtually no news while institutionalized. Later that decade, his health failing, he was transferred to a Mendota Mental Health Institute, where he died of cancer and respiratory illnesses on July 26th. Like I said, he inspired Hollywood into making, like, you know, inspiration for Psycho, to even Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill, Leatherface even, and he's even been referenced in numerous songs over the years. But let's look at this as, I don't know how to put it actually, he wasn't right in the head, okay? I can't tell you without really being certain that it was more of the things around him happening, and like I said, the death of his mother just ended him. It didn't help his health mentally, just to even be declared sane. Some of you may feel different. You know, some of you may feel like certain criminals who don't have a really great mental health to be declared insane, and it shouldn't happen. In short, where I'm getting with this is, you know, the environment around him brought up a killer. He wasn't necessarily born a killer, and I'm guessing, you know, if you look into psychology of a serial killer, which I'm not saying he is, he probably can be classified as a serial killer to some people, but not necessarily, he's really not defined as a serial killer. But in a killer's mindset, in short, definitely serial killers, it just depends on what it is. You know, I don't think he meant to kill his brother. I'm not feeling sympathy or empathy, but pushing a lot of blame on yourself for your brother's death can be hard. You know, a brush fire, which probably never happened, went out of control. You know, and if he did intentionally do it, it would fit a mindset of such a killer that would classify not as arsonist, or a serial arsonist, or any type of arsonist. But it just doesn't help his case, his mental health or anything. And in short, like I said, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a detective, I'm not, you know, feeling sympathy or empathy, but he wasn't there. His physical body was there. His mentality wasn't. And I guess that's what I was trying to say the whole time. But looking into his mind, it may have not been perfect, you know, from the start. You know, maybe his health started disintegrating when his brother died. Like I said, if you're being eyed at that age for your sibling's death or a friend's death or parents' death, that's a lot of blame to push on yourself, definitely when you got eyes on you and saying you did it. And when his father died, it probably didn't help. And like I said, he probably didn't care. Maybe he did, maybe he felt some sort of sympathy and empathy. But at the same time, when his mother died, his mother was the only thing he had left. He didn't have her anymore, and he went downhill. And it seems like I'm rambling because I am, but I want the audience, you guys, to understand a little bit about what can go on in a killer's mind in this case. Not every killer is the same killer. A lot of serial killers do show heuristics. Like I say, he's not technically defined as a serial killer because a serial killer has to have three or more bodies in a cooling period. That's how a serial killer is defined, and he only had two cooling periods over the years. And two bodies, I should say, more specifically. But, you know, what I'm saying is this, okay? Not every killer is the same. Some people empathize with the killer, some people sympathize, some people disgust or show disgust with the killer. But the reason that I brought up this case wasn't to necessarily have you feel sympathy. You know, I wanted you guys to look into a killer's mind such as Ed's and decide for yourself. I wanted you to be the person and not just understand it, but to feel attached in some way so you can understand the mindset of a killer to another. So without further ado, without rambling, and a little bit tired, so it's like 2:01 a.m. on this Wednesday, but you know, it's just what it is. But anyhow, hopefully there's a lot less rambling in the next episode. The next episode is going to, probably this Friday, it looks like. I got two trailers coming out probably today at some point, if not today, over the course of today, tomorrow, or something. Coast to Coast Cults trailer is dropping. And also the first trailer for Late Night Rabbits. And so without further ado, see you guys next time when, well, either for the trailer or for the next episode of the Bennington Trial, or of Without a Trace, which is technically the Bennington Triangle. Without further ado, I guess I'll see you guys next time.